This weekend, the Albany Symphony Orchestra will present two quite different concerts at the Palace Theater in Albany. On Saturday, March 9th, the orchestra will perform Mussorgsky's Pictures at an Exhibition and a recent violin concerto entitled Fire and Blood by Michael, I'm going to pronounce it Daugherty.
Daugherty is good.
Excellent. And that is confirmed, so we'll go on from there. Then on Sunday, Cowboy Dave rides again in a program called Compose Yourself with Cowboy Dave.
Two concerts, why didn't somebody tell me?
Maestro and Cowboy Dave himself, David Allen Miller, joins us now from the Albany Symphony Orchestra to tell us more. And it's always lovely to see you, my friend. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Joe. It's good to be with you, as always.
I miss you. I haven't seen you in
a little while. I miss you, too. And I must say that this giant tome, Fear Itself, from the last half hour sitting before me is most intimating. Sort of weighing down the discussion.
We'll hide it under the desk.
Hide it under the desk. There you go. Oh, I feel better already.
A lot about fear.
A weight is lifted off of me. We're going to talk about fire and blood instead of fear.
Which is like a bit of turnover.
And there's another piece on the program called trauma, actually, which we haven't been highlighting. No, seriously, it is.
Really?
But it's trauma, T-R-A-M-A, but we can talk about that, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Not with the U. So does that take out the trauma and the trauma?
I have to work on the meaning of that. It's a Mexican piece by a Mexican composer. It has nothing to do with trauma.
Okay.
It has to do with the Day of the Dead, though, if you want to talk about joyful things. El Dia del Muertos. I'll explain. Ask me a question.
You know, I often talk about...
Ask me a leading question.
Do your job, Joe. Ask me questions.
No, please.
I always find it interesting sometimes on this show where we will... We'll sort of inadvertently, you know, we'll book guests by availability and a schedule and things that they're doing and whether or not
we have anything to say. Is that what you mean?
Well, no, you know, and you book guests that way. And what strangely comes apparent often is that this theme where you don't expect it. It just happens. So this morning we
Today
had this
the theme
woman,
is fear, death.
Well, it's sort of, yes, that's basically
well, my
what I'm getting at.
My concert is very joyful. It just happens to involve things like blood and death and such.
All this stuff. Yeah. Well, the core elements of life and death itself. Sure.
Absolutely. Fire and blood. Fire and blood.
Let us talk about, my interviewee question to you was going to be
master interviewer.
Does that kind of thing go over better in March than it would in, you know, June or September? I mean,
it goes over better if you just keep saying pictures at an exhibition and don't even talk about the first half of the program. No fear, no blood, no fire. Pictures at an exhibition. It's so fabulous. You'll love it. And there's some pieces on the first half that are also, I must say, fabulous. In fact, I think it's the funniest thing because, you know, we always pitch the famous piece on the second half, which our subscribers love and the audience love. But I must say that particularly the younger and the less experienced concert goers invariably are far more wowed by the really interesting, bizarre, unfamiliar piece on the first half than they are by the second half. Although I must say that Pictures at an Exhibition is a great piece for people who aren't yet concert music lovers because it is so pictorial and it's so colorful and all the movements are brief and it's just a fabulous thing.
So for you as a conductor, and it may be impossible to answer this, but for you as a conductor, which is harder? I mean, in the sense of when you are doing a piece...
That's a great question.
When you're doing a piece like Pictures at an Exhibition, does that say, okay, well, we've done this. As a group, we've done this. We know this. We can sort of... Now we're going to put this one in what they call in television a bottle episode,
right?
In the sense that we can put this in, it'll fill that spot, so we can work like
hell in getting
the new stuff and working that out and figuring it out.
Quite the contrary, the scrutiny is on the way you perform the famous piece, because everybody knows how that goes. So Picture an Exhibition is terribly daunting for us to do. We all know it, we've all done it, we love it, we know how it goes, but to really make it sound worthy of all the great tradition of performance is a great challenge. Whereas a new piece, as long as you play it well, I mean, the audience doesn't necessarily have a framework for knowing how it goes, I hate to say. But I must say that we're often complimented by composers because living composers often feel like when they have a piece played, the conductor spends all of his or her time, you know, sculpting the Mahler symphony in the second half and neglecting their piece, whereas we try to really balance it. So we spend a lot of time on the new piece, a lot of focus on it, and we also work a lot.
Okay,
on
yeah,
on
so
the
you
old
do
piece.
Both.
And we love the
it's
balance.
A very diplomatic answer.
Well, I think you have to do both. You have to treat both with great reverence. But this is a beautiful program. Shall I tell you about it?
Please tell me about it, because I am fascinated with the new work because of there not being an expectation, as you said, and I think very rightly so, that people are wowed by this new stuff.
And this violin concerto, which Michael Dougherty has written, is a total wow. It's called Fire and Blood because it's inspired by these unbelievable murals that Diego Rivera, on commission from Edsel Ford, created inside the Detroit Institute of Art, which is one of the great art museums in the world. If you're ever in Detroit and you haven't been there yet, you have to go in, and there's this one room with these incredible murals, these friezes that Diego Rivera created, all on all the walls surrounding you. And it's called, I think, something industry, American industry or Detroit industry. And so Michael was commissioned by the Detroit Symphony, of which he was resident composer for a number of years. He's a professor at University of Michigan, so he's got close ties to Detroit, to create a violin concerto inspired by these murals, and thus Fire and Blood was born. And it's all about Diego Rivera and about the first movement's called Volcano, and it's and the last movement's Industry, and it's all about these incredible pictures, these kind of it's funny that Hugo Chavez just died. It's very Hugo Chavez related. You know, it's industry, the dark side and the positive side, and workers and fires and machines, and a very powerful thing. And then also in the piece, Michael sort of made it a bit of a biographical piece, somehow having to do with Diego Rivera, who of course was married to Frida Kahlo, the great Mexican painter, who was very much consumed with blood, thus the title Fire and Blood. And her, you know, she had that terrible accident, and her pictures are unbelievably vivid and drawn with lots of horrible, almost Egon Schiele-like distortions and injuries and blood. So the second movement is the Frida Kahlo movement, and it's just an amazing, very dynamic piece. If you happen to remember, for those people who came to our concert, I think it was about the same time last year, also at the Palace Theater, we did a piece of Michael's called Duse Machina, a piano concerto all about trains, with this fabulous African-American pianist, Terrence Wilson. And it was kind of one of the great sleepers of the season. It was a real wow. And his music, Michael's music, is always inspired by popular culture, and it's very accessible. And he takes a lot of the sound world of Hollywood, so it's a very familiar kind of idiom. And it was great, so then I wanted to really do another one. And this one I love even more. Ida Kavafian, great violinist and teacher at Bard Conservatory, is the soloist. She's the one who recorded it with the Detroit Symphony. So very exciting. And then because this is a piece about Mexican painters, we link it to the second half because that's a piece about painting and about visual arts, Pictures in an Exhibition by Mussorgsky, the ultimate visual art piece. And then we link it to this little opening piece by Gabriela Ortiz, a genuine Mexican composer, sort of the Mexican connection. So it's real Mexico, imagined Mexico, painting, and then painting. Sort of a painting in Mexico concert.
So after that explanation.
Very colorful.
After that explanation, my first question becomes all the more relevant, which is, so is that serendipity when those things sort of work out, or is that very thoughtful planning of those works?
No, it's design. It's what we call programming. Which, as you know, is maybe one of the great challenges that conductors face. And, you know, I have a lot of helpers who help
me
with
the programming. But I'm curious into how much of that is luck, in the sense of, well, this is available to us, this person will be available to us, oh, we could do this, and then you find a theme that exists.
Right. Well, every concert is generated a little bit differently. Some have tighter thematic connections and some have none. And sometimes it's just a matter of feeling that certain pieces go together. This one happened to fall together very wonderfully, mainly because I knew the Dougherty piece. I knew what it was about. And so it came together really, really easily. And it grew out of that. The seed idea was wanting to do this violin concerto of Michael Dougherty's.
The thing and why I love you and what I think is amazing about what you do is that knowledge in the history of what it is that you perform. So when you say, when I know it, it's more than having just listened to it. You know a lot about it. You know its history. You know its heritage. You know where it comes from. And I'm going to make an assumption, and then you can either correct me or expand, which is that that you enjoy that part of it, of getting to know the piece.
I love it. And I'm always scouting for pieces. And I have large piles in my very unkempt studio of pieces that have been sent to me or that I know I'm interested in. And I kind of have a mental list of things I'd like to program and things that might go together. And I keep notes. And, you know, planning can be a year-long process. We really, the minute we finish the next season, we've just signed off in January on next season. So we're already in planning the season after next. I actually just today am finishing a National Endowment for the Arts grant for a festival that will happen in 2015. So we're trying to be 2 years out, which is the way orchestras have to function. And so the beautiful thing about that, I must say, I told some of my staff, I love doing that NEA proposal because it forces us to think about what we want to do in 2 years and to focus it and to make it concrete. And then we begin to think about the season as a result of our initial thoughts about the NEA grant.
Well, we feel the same way here. Whenever we do a grant, we love it because it focuses us to think on something that we would never focus a year at. When you're actually writing them, you hate it.
Oh, it's just terrible.
It's horrible.
And I'm busy emailing composers. Would you be willing to write a piece about such and such and such? And such? You know,
right.
Trying to pull
and we're not even
together.
Writing. And you know, like we guys like that, we don't have to write them. We just we just come up with the content, and then hardworking people who actually know what they're doing.
Right. We actually write them. So I've been dealing with it's a migrations festival. It's going to be fantastic. All about immigration and animal migrations and migrations of African American artists from the South to the North, and so that's going to be spring 2015.
Yeah, no, see, that's great.
It's really a cool thing. We've had a great week on it. It's been
really,
wonderful.
Really neat. Yeah. So, and that happens here too, where you think of, well, we're working on tomorrow's show, we're working on the next day's show, and then, oh, yeah, we have a concert on Saturday. You know what I mean? Where you say...
Hard to get out from under the immediate crisis.
You know, you're writing the grant, and then you've got this huge thing facing you.
Right.
So that seems to me would be a great balance as well.
It is a great challenge to balance all those things. And it's a constant, as you know, with your job and everybody's job, it's a constant balance of what the priorities are and weighing, you know, how much time you can give to this and how much time you can give to that.
Yeah.
I must say, though, I found the internet the most incredible teaching tool for myself as a conductor, in that, you know, now on YouTube, I hate to always trumpet the magnificence of YouTube, but I can see every performance of Pictures in Exhibition pretty much that's ever been on television or the radio or recorded. And I've had lessons in the last week from Toscanini, of whom I heard a little bit rehearsing a movement of it, from George Solti, who gave a brilliant half-hour description of it in a performance that he did with the Chicago Symphony, from you know, the pianist Svatoslav Richter, who played the original piano version. So incredible tools available to artists to sort of understand what the grand traditions are.
If I ask an actor if they have seen, if they're taking on an iconic role, say Willie Loman, and I ask an actor,
and they say, never, I've never seen it.
I'm not going to watch it. I don't want to see it. I have witnessed it. I don't want to see it. I don't want it to get in my head. I want it to be my own. So I find it interesting that you want to take in as much. So
I want to get as many ideas as I can. And the great thing is, if I listen to and watch and observe and see, you know, 30 different versions of an iconic piece, it's so jumbled in my head that I pretty much can't recall, you know, the slow version versus the fast version, but I arrive at knowing the way I want it to go in my version. So it's just a matter of, like, it's like food for thought. It's giving you a lot of food for thought.
So when you hear something, if you're on YouTube and you hear something and it's a particular version and you say, wow, I never thought of that, that's cool. So that has an effect, whereas you're like, boy, we were doing it last night and it sounded better.
Yeah, usually I find it a waste of time because usually I hate certain things. But even when I hate something, I listened to Gergiev, this great living Russian conductor. I thought, well, he must really be great at it because it's originally a piano piece and Russians know how the piano version goes. And I thought it was just awful. It was terrible. but even the things you hate, you find you really learn from because you don't want to do it that way. And conversely, with George Solti, he being another great pianist, you know, who's no longer alive, but he gave this wonderful talk about it, and he pointed out a couple of places in the original piano version where there are sforzandi, where there are accents that for some reason Ravel didn't put into the orchestration. And he has the Chicago Symphony do them, and they're fantastic. And I thought, wow, I think I'll steal that idea. That's a good idea. So it's a matter of, you know, it's like you take piano lessons, you're learning how to play the piano, your teacher's giving you input. So to me, nobody's beyond learning new things. I think it's
very
exciting.
I feel that way.
I have the whole world to teach me, all the great conductors of the past to help me.
You can't have enough information going in. You can't have enough knowledge. You can't have enough history.
And the challenge is when you do a piece that becomes one of your repertoire pieces, it's very easy for you to sort of just do it the same way over and over again, and that right. gets boring for you and for the musicians and for the audience. So to me, I'm always trying to find new ideas of different approaches to a piece.
People often ask me, you know, do I like, will I watch somebody interview a person that I'm going to interview? And I love to do that, but I'm not watching how they interview. I'm watching how the person answers.
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. Yeah. So you're ready for it. Did we talk about trauma? I don't think we did. We mentioned it.
Well, we talked about trauma, but I want to be sure to save enough time to talk about the Sunday concert.
Oh, I will.
Okay, but trauma is it's this lovely young...
I mean, you mentioned it was your introductory piece, right?
Yeah, it's the first piece. It's about 10 minutes.
Yep.
And it's actually a piece that Gabriela Ortiz, who's this lovely young Mexican composer living in Mexico City, sadly unable to come here because she teaches in Mexico and can't get off her teaching schedule, but she wrote this for the Kronos Quartet. And again, on YouTube, there's this fantastic... It's not this movement, but it was a part of a larger four-movement string quartet piece initially about the Day of the Dead, and there's a performance of the Kronos playing it, and they play it in these incredible funeral masks, these Mexican funeral masks. So the Kronos Quartet's all sitting there in these masks playing the piece, but it's a fantastic, very... Her parents were folklorists and started one of the sort of iconic Mexican folklore performing groups, and so she's got a lot of Mexican folk culture in her, and it comes out in this piece. It's a beautiful thing.
So if we've learned anything this morning, and I think we've learned a lot, is that if we can't make the concert, we just can go on YouTube.
No, that's what you're not supposed to know. No, they're just little bits and pieces.
That's
you can never have the same experience.
Replicate the experience that you're going to have.
And I must say that, I mean, of all concerts, this is the kind of concert that really you can't replicate the live experience, because it's all about orchestral color. You know, the Mussorgsky is the most famous kind of pictorial color piece in all the repertoire. And the Doherty and the Gabriela Ortiz are both about sound color. So you just don't get that the same unless your equipment is unbelievable, which I don't think anybody's is that unbelievable.
It's March 9th at the Palace Theater, 7:30 in the evening, 7:30. And of course, you can always find out more information by going to albanysymphony.com.
And besides, when you see it live, all sorts of things could go wrong. It's so exciting. You got to come see. It's like
well,
a sport.
A lot of things, a lot of things go right.
And everything
that's
will go right.
That's great.
And it's a beautiful communal experience of everybody in the room together. It's a beautiful feeling.
So you clear out the theater. Sunday comes, 3:00 in the afternoon, and Cowboy Dave rides into town.
Rides now. This is a favorite show of mine. It's called Compose Yourself, and it's all about turning the kids into great composers.
Okay.
It happens that I play Cowboy Dave because I seem to always play Cowboy Dave in these things, and there's a Cowboy Dave version of it. But because we will have done Mussorgsky the night before, it's sort of like Cowboy Dave meets Pictures at an Exhibition. So it's sort of a Wild West Russian amalgam, and there's this character named Elmas Parsley, an Elvis Presley impersonator who is convinced that he's written the greatest masterpiece of all times, and the kids and I have to teach him that, in fact, he's got a lot to learn about composition. So we go through harmony, melody, rhythm, orchestration, and we create The Great Gate of Kiev, Mussorgsky's piece. And it's a lot of great Mussorgsky and some other great music, the Hoedown from Rodeo, and great time for kids of all ages. And adults love these shows, too, because they're really educational and fun and really cool.
It says here in the press release, wild and wacky.
It is wild and wacky. Getting wackier all the time.
Yeah, I was about to say. So, because you dress up, right? You dress up in like a little...
I don't dress up. I'm just Cowboy Dave. I mean, I'm a cowboy. I'm not myself. I have a mustache and everything.
Right.
But I don't dress up. I mean, that's not dressing up, is it? It's my alter ego. That's who I am.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, you put on a cowboy persona, right?
I do.
Right.
But I am Cowboy Dave.
Well, I know you are Cowboy Dave. Like, now you're not Cowboy Dave.
And Elmas Parsley puts on an Elvis persona. So you got a cowboy persona and an Elvis persona. And it's a lot of fun. And
what
it's
could
really,
go wrong with that?
It's a lot of fun, and it's wildly educational. So it's a really great introduction for the kids to learn and hear an orchestra.
What kind of crowds do you get for this?
We get 1,000, hopefully 1,000 plus people. I mean, ideally we get a couple thousand, but we'd love everybody out there to come, and then we'll get a few thousand.
That's wonderful.
Because we got the whole Palace Theater, which is 2,800 seats, so we'd love everybody to come.
And how is it interacting with the kids? I mean, what do they actually do?
They actually have to sing and clap and do all sorts of call and response, and they really, everything has got an audience participation element. Every time we learn a different thing, they have to sing along with me, and it's really fun. I mean, if you've never been to one, it's a 1 hour, it never exceeds 1 hour. It's 3:00 in the afternoon at the Palace Theater. It's totally fun and really great just for kids of all ages.
Because that's like, for you and the orchestra, that's
our audience, our future audience.
Right. Well, absolutely.
We're building them now. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was just thinking as far as, you know, attention span.
Well, that's our attention span. Yeah. No, my attention span is
the
much
kids
shorter.
Could go on for hours.
My attention span is much shorter than that. I start waning after about 3.5 minutes. How long is a pop song? It's about that long.
And what kind of you're at a point now, and I hesitate to ask this question because I know how I feel when I'm asked it, but you should be seeing the end result now.
you mean death?
No. Meaning you're seeing these kids in adulthood. Well,
it's my 20th season here this
right.
year.
Right. Well, that's so why I asked the question. I mean, I've been here 20 years. So that's why I asked.
Right. I prefaced the a little letter to our wonderful subscribers in our program book with this little story that I was in the Slingerland's Price Chopper, where I spend most evenings because it's my favorite place in the world. And a nice young lady stopped me and she said, "Oh, I want to thank you. You've changed my son's life. You know, he came to the children's class with me and he just loves music." And I said, "How old is the little tyke?" And she said, "He's 26. So, I mean, these kids came to my shows, you know, 17 and 18 years ago. So, it's wonderful. I see a lot of the kids now, adults, at the grown-up concerts and sometimes bringing their own kids, which makes you feel really old.
Because when you hear that phrase, "I grew up listening to you."
Yeah, that's weird.
For the first time, uh-huh. Really weird.
That's really weird.
Very, very weird.
20 years, is it, Joe?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you and I have been about the same time. So.
But it's a beautiful thing because I feel, as I'm sure you do, that I finally understand the gig and I'm getting it right for the first time. It only took about 18 years to figure it out.
Well, you're far more mature than I am.
That must be it. I haven't figured out anything.
Well,
you're brilliant. Does
Cowboy Dave go to the Slingerland's Price Chopper too, or just David Allen Miller?
Not frequently. But I get a lot of questions because I always come out to the lobby and thank the kids. And they always say, "Is that a real mustache?" And I always say, "Yes, it's real. It belonged to my Aunt Margaret. She lent it to me for the show." So, because they can tell that it's not that authentic. I mean, it's hair. It's just somebody else's hair. That's all.
Well, that's creepy.
Yeah. Should we leave it on that note? I don't know.
Yeah, it's creepy.
No, it's fun. No, we have a great time.
Compose yourself with Cowboy Dave, March 10th. It's at the Palace Theater at 3 o'clock. So this is a fantastic weekend. March 9th, this Saturday, 7:30, Palace Theater. Pictures at an exhibition and this incredible...
Daredevil thing.
Absolutely amazing.
Fabulous. Unbelievable.
Beautiful work. And then the next day, Sunday in the afternoon, 3 o'clock, you, Cowboy Dave, compose yourself and the orchestra gets together and it should just be a wonderful time.
Fun for all. And we're actually doing it Monday morning for school groups, so we're doing a huge, huge weekend.
We're going to be, my God.
Yeah, I'm going to collapse on Monday afternoon.
Busy,
get ready for the
busy,
next thing.
Busy. All right. The Albany Symphony's 2-weekend concerts are at the Palace in Albany, New York. To learn more information, go to albanysymphony.com. AlbanySymphony.com. David Allen Miller, you're one of my favorite humans.
Thank you, Joe.
Very, very much as always.
Back at you, dear.
All right. Good luck. Have a wonderful time with the orchestra and the great music and the great work you do. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.